Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to everyone. Welcome to the first Neralo webinar on RN Basics, an introduction to the Neralo membership, taking place on Monday, 6th of February 2017 at 1800 UTC. We'll not be doing a roll call as it's a webinar, but if I could please remind all participants on the phone bridge, as well as computers, to mute your speakers and microphones when not speaking. Also, please don't forget to state your name before speaking for the transcription purposes. Thank you all for joining. I'll now turn over to Glenn McKnight, the chair of Neralo. Thank you very much. Over to you, Glenn.
Great. Thank you so much, Azim. Thank you all for coming today. Judith and I welcome you to this call. We see great value in having someone as informed and active in Aaron on our call today, and I thank Chris for his opportunity to join us. I'd like to just tell you a little bit about Chris before we start. So Chris is a lawyer. He's based in Ottawa. He has over 36 years of technical, business, and legal experience. Chris is the founder of Tacit Law, and it's known as a boutique law firm providing a broad range of legal and consulting services to clients in the information technology sector, communication, regulatory industry, and broader commercial and not-for-profit sectors. In addition, he provides traditional legal services. Chris assists clients with strategic planning, governance, risk management, business reviews, commercial transactions, as well as corporate and regulatory compliance. Chris's past professional experience includes holding a senior executive role in a publicly traded company, being a partner in a major regional law firm, and working in a national law firm. Prior to practicing law, he had another venue that he pursued, and he pursued engineering and managerial positions in the private sector. He's not only a lawyer, he's a registered trademark agent, licensed professional engineer, and also holds an MBA. Chris serves on numerous boards, not-for-profit boards in Canada, and a green technology startup firm. He's also involved in the internet governance through various volunteer activities, including Aaron Advisory Council. Welcome, Chris. And as a personal friend, I know Chris for a number of years. He's been very active and very seminal in helping the Internet Society of Canada to be as successful as it is. So welcome again, Chris. Okay, folks, so our agenda today is we want all those who are attending our Aaron session and our General Assembly that's going to be in New Orleans, we want you to have a heads up on the actual Aaron organization and what Chris is involved in as an advisory counselor. So I'm going to turn it over to Chris on his presentations, and if we can hold back on the questions till the end of it, and thank you, William, for posting a question already, I will make sure that it's asked at the end of the presentation. So I'm turning it back to Chris. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Glenn, and thank you all for your attention today. I very much appreciate the opportunity of giving you this presentation. And for those of you who haven't yet been that familiarized with Aaron, to give you a little bit of an introduction. Today's introduction will just be a very high-level overview of Aaron and where it fits in the Internet ecosystem. I'm not going to get into how Aaron does its job. That may be for some future time if you folks are interested. I'll be happy to come back and do that presentation at another time. So Aaron's job is the same as that of four other regional internet registries, and that is really to look after predominantly the allocation of internet numbering resources. The world is divided up into five regions, and as you can see, Aaron is predominantly North America. It's Canada, the U.S., much of the English-speaking Caribbean, and a few other little odds and ends, including Antarctica, for those who are interested. So what do RIRs do? They manage the distribution of IP addresses and autonomous system numbers. They provide reverse DNS and provide a public WHOIS database. If any of you don't know what that any of that terminology is, please ask during the question and answer session and we'll get into that. And they also support technical infrastructure through various technical coordination. So just like you have on the domain name side, that whole ecosystem, the RIRs look after the numbering resources. The way that they're structured is they're independent organizations. They're not for profit. They charge fees for the services that they provide. They don't sell or lease numbering resources as such, but they do charge fees for the services that they provide, and they're 100% community funded. In typically, they are membership based. The members in Aaron, for example, are ISPs and large telecom organizations that have their own networks. And those are the parties who get resources from Aaron who can also be members. The community itself develops the policies for the allocation and assignment of numbering resources. It is a function that's done by the community, and the community is broader than just the membership. Anybody who has an interest in this area can participate in that process. So how are numbering resources allocated? Well, they come from IANA in accordance with IANA global policies to the five RIRs, and each RIR then has its own policy process for how it allocates and assigns addressing space. The most common way is for address space to be allocated to ISPs who then may sub-allocate to other ISPs or assign to end users. However, it is also possible as an end user to get an allocation or, sorry, an assignment directly from an RIR. So focusing now on Aaron more specifically rather than RIRs generically, Aaron supports the operation of the Internet through the management of Internet number resources, which is done in accordance with the policies that are developed by the community and related contractual arrangements that are developed and approved by the Board of Trustees of Aaron. Aaron staff helps to coordinate the development of policies by the community, but it is the community and not staff who develop those policies. It's engaged in outreach. So what I'm doing today here is part of Aaron's outreach effort. There are others, and we'll talk about those in a bit. So as I was saying, this is Aaron's service region, that's the area that that Aaron covers. In terms of numbers, right now Aaron has about 20,000 plus direct customers, 5,400 plus members, and 80 plus professional staff. Based near the Washington, D.C. area. But I want to stress again that anyone interested in number resource management and policy development can participate in that process. Geographically, you see the split here. Most of the member organizations are based in the U.S. with a smaller percentage, about 12% in Canada, and a small sliver in the Caribbean, and a much smaller sliver that isn't even visible there in the other few locations where Aaron operates. How is Aaron structured? It's governed by a board of trustees. Six are elected for 3-year terms. and then by an advisory council of 15 elected people who have three-year terms. And then there is also an part of the organization called the NRONC, who are elected for three-year terms. And that is our link to ICANN, and I'll explain that in a minute. The Board of Trustees, six are elected by the membership, and the President and CEO is also automatically a member of the Board of Trustees. They do rotating elections, so you don't have the whole Board of Trustees turning over in any one year. And so typically two seats open up in each election year. And there is an ability to appoint an additional voting member for diversity. And diversity can be demographic, it can be geographic, and can be professional skill set. And basically the Board of Trustees has a fiduciary duty to make sure that the activities of Aaron are conducted in a manner that is appropriate and lawful and in accordance with good governance, corporate governance practices. It's also responsible for the strategic planning and fiscal oversight. The advisory council, we have 15 members. I'm one of them, elected for a three-year term. Five seats open up each year. Again, the idea is not to have a massive turnover in any one year. And basically, the advisory council people serve as advisors to the board on internet numbering resource policy. We take the policies that people bring in and work with them. We assign people to shepherd them and to ensure that they accord with the requirements for policy and that there is consensus, community consensus, before they are forwarded to the board for ratification. And again, this one slide, this one bullet, is the subject of a whole separate presentation on how that process works, which I'm not going to get into today. The NRONC is a 15-member body. Each RIR gets three, two elected and one appointed. They assist in the ICANN global policy development process, and they select two of the ICANN board seats. And they provide advice to the ICANN board on number resource allocation policy in conjunction with the RIR. As I said earlier, the Board of Trustees is responsible for the strategic planning of the organization. Each year it updates the strategic plan, and this drives the priorities of the organization, the operational plan, and so on. And you can see there is a link there to where you can find the plan. In terms of organizational objective, what we've got right now, I don't know what's happening there, but somebody else is tinkering with this. Organizational objective. You can see here there are a variety of organizational objectives. I'm not going to read them all. They're self-evident from the slide. But clearly, in addition to the purely functional role that Aaron has, there is a big role that Aaron sees for itself in terms of including participation from community and promoting diversity, promoting participation from the Caribbean, which is a little more difficult because of geography sometimes, and so on. We also end up, the Who Is database is an important tool for law enforcement. So we're constantly, working to ensure that the Who Is database is accurate both for law enforcement purposes and for other reasons as well. Obviously, everybody wants to have an accurate registry. And at the same time, ensuring that there is compliance with privacy laws and so on. The Aaron organization is very involved in sort of technical issues associated with routing at a high level to make sure that routing of numbers works properly and efficiently. As I'm sure most of you, if not all of you, already know, in the Aaron region, IPv4 addresses have run out. It's not possible to get any more from Aaron. So one of the things that Aaron is trying to do is to promote the transition to IPv6, create awareness, and also provide support, technical support to organizations that are going in that direction. So these are the functions that Aaron manages, IP address allocations and assignments, autonomous system number assignments, transfers. Now, Aaron's role in transfers is to make sure that the transfers are authorized in accordance with policy. In other words, that any transfers that happen are happened in accordance with Aaron policy, and to record the outcome of those transfers that are approved so that the registry records are accurate when IP resources are transferred from one entity to another. As I said, they reverse DNS function and the directory services like whois and whowas. There are a whole bunch of technical things that Aaron is doing to harden the routing of numbering and to prevent fraud. They're involved in the DNSSEC, which is a way of securing DNS, resource certification, also known as RPKI. Aaron also provides the community software project repository where developers can actually deposit software tools that make it easy to use and manipulate Aaron's information, and various forms of whois, directory services, and they maintain, they do testing and so on for new ways of doing things. So it's a very forward-looking, innovative organization. Aaron has a very good compendium of training and educational materials and videos. And there are also opportunities to learn more about Aaron at both at what are called Aaron on the Road meetings or Aaron and Nanos on the Road meetings. And what happens there is Aaron staff, AC members and trustees in small groups will travel to different cities within the Aaron region and basically put on a one-day seminar, sometimes alone, sometimes in conjunction with NANOG, in which they explain in greater detail what Aaron does, how it does it, and introduce the members of the community who don't know much about Aaron to other tools and so on. So if any of you are interested, if you go to Aaron.net under the Participate tab, you'll be able to see what Aaron on the Road sessions are coming up, and if there's one near you, you can participate. Similarly, if you're in the Aaron region and you think that Aaron should be coming to do an Aaron on the Road, then you can contact me or Susan Hamlin at Aaron and make a request, and if there's enough demand, Aaron is typically pretty happy to go where there is a significant demand for such presentations. So that whole thing of Aaron on the Road and so on is part of the outreach and community engagement part of Aaron's mandate. Another big way that the community participates is twice a year. There are public policy meetings in April and October of each year within the Aaron region, and they're spread around between Canada, the U.S., and the Caribbean portions. They rotate around through various locations. in addition, sometimes at NANOG meetings, Aaron gets a slot for what's called a public policy consultation, which from a policy development process has the same status as one of the major public policy meetings, although usually in a PPC, unlike a PPM, there will only be a subset of policy considered rather than the entire docket. At the upcoming NANOG, there was a choice made not to have a PPC because there wasn't anything really pressing. So anything that needs to be discussed will be discussed at the PPM in April in New Orleans. And one of the things that, as I said, we do is we work with the technical community, and we put a lot of effort into working with Caribbean organizations to maximize inclusion. Also, we foster working relationships on a global scale, which is, again, what this presentation is all about as well. Through the NRONC and in other fora within ICANN and so on, Aaron is present to interact with other entities that are involved in internet governance and to both share with them what Aaron does and learn from them. As I alluded earlier, there are that you can get help if you're looking at IPv6 implementation and you're not sure where to start. There is a whole, there are staff people at Aaron who are willing to help, and there are resources available as well. And Aaron has a bunch of mailing lists. Only one of them is a closed list for members only, but you can participate in any of the other lists that you want. And so if you have an interest, for example, in public policy, you can join Aaron-PPML at Aaron.net. If you're interested in expressing your views on other sort of more strategic fee and other types of issues, you can join Aaron-Consult. If you're a technical person, you can join the technical list and so on. Announce is one that you can join just to get generic announcements from Aaron about things in the community that happen from time to time. Okay, and Aaron is very present on social media as well, so feel free to follow Aaron and link up with them using these other social media vehicles. So, how can you participate? Subscribe to an Aaron mailing list, attend a public policy and members meeting. And on that point, I want to add that Aaron has a fellowship program. So people in the Aaron region can ask to be subsidized to attend an Aaron meeting. And if they want to learn more about Aaron and have a genuine interest in its mandate and the industry for whatever reason, and if accepted, all of the travel and attendance costs are covered for that particular meeting. You can also voice your opinion in various consultations. Very important, if you are deploying IPv6, we'd love to hear from you and what your experience is like, and others can learn from your experiences. You can connect on social media. There are also some committees that that have various volunteers from the community. You can volunteer to serve on those. And if you're a member, you can vote in the annual elections for trustees and AC representatives and NRONC representatives. And that concludes my presentation. So at this point, I would be happy to take any questions that you may have, and I'll put myself on mute while I'm listening.
Great. Thank you so much. And Judith Hellerstein has joined us as well. For the sake of expediency, I've copied and pasted the questions into our logistics page, and some of them are questions, some of them are comments, And the first question was from William Cunningham, who basically asked, what is the Aaron Advisory Council? And I know you dealt with that, Chris, but I want to make sure I turn back to William and ask William directly, did you get the answers you expected from Chris on this issue, or is there a follow-up question to Chris? Over to you, William. I think you're on mute, William. Can you hear us?
How are you doing? Can you hear me?
Go ahead, William.
Okay. I, for the most part, got most of the answers, but I'm interested in, you know, just a real quick 10-15 second overview. The other thing I'm of the advisory council, the other thing I'm interested in, I'm not sure I heard, was more information on the link between ICANN and Aaron. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, William. That's a great
question. Okay.
Back to you, Chris.
All right. Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Glenn. So as to the AC, so basically, you know, it's a whole separate presentation, but the AC basically stewards the policy development process. And so what happens is when an author proposes a numbering policy, the chair of the AC assigns two shepherds to basically take that policy, see if it meets Aaron criteria, and then work with the author and the community to basically develop that policy and see how far it will go. Usually a policy, a policy has to be vetted in at least one public policy meeting. And the shepherds have the role of presenting and explaining the policy to the community at that meeting and taking back any feedback it has. The AC also has monthly meetings at which it discusses policy, advances policy, and so on. AC shepherds have the discretion to change policy language. Once a policy is handed over and becomes a draft policy of Aaron, it's under the control of the shepherds and not the original author, although typically the shepherds will continue to work with the author if the author wants to stay involved. Ultimately, if there is support for that policy after there is sufficient indication of community consensus, the AC will vote to ask the Board of Trustees to actually adopt the policy. So essentially, the AC acts as stewards in the policy development process, but they do not in and of themselves. We do not actually approve policy. We merely recommend. You know, we take a draft policy, we take a proposal, and if it's not rejected, we turn it into a draft policy, and then we work with that, and if it's not rejected at that stage, we turn it into a recommended draft policy, and then at that point, if it's not abandoned, we urge for it to go to a last call and eventually adoption. From there, it's really the board's responsibility. During that process, we do get advice from staff and their lawyers on operational and legal implications of adopting the proposed policy and whether it's clear enough to be implemented and so on before it goes to the board. And once a proposal is adopted, there's usually a period of time that's required to actually implement it. Once that happens, the numbering resource policy manual, which contains all numbering policies, is updated to reflect the new policy. So that's the AC's role. Does that answer that part of the question sufficiently?
William says he has. And in fact, that was a great question because I actually love the shepherding process that you guys do, and I've always suggested this process for ICANN. I'm going to turn over to Judith, who's the Secretary and Vice Chair for Norella, to continue on the questions. Judith, please.
Yes, thanks so much for your questions. So the next one are two questions that are kind of interrelated. Eduardo asked why our policy process is different in each region if the function is the same, and Alfredo asked how feasible would it be to have a unified policy process and reciprocal rule?
Okay, well, you know, I wasn't there when the sort of numbering the regions all sort of developed, but what I can say is that due to the unique needs of each region, and part of that need is the different rates at which internet numbers are used and deployed and so on, and cultural reasons and a whole host of reasons, the RIRs did develop, and each is responsible for its own region, just like, you know, each country has its own country code domain rules, and we could say, well, why isn't there a global one? I don't know why there isn't, but there isn't. Each country does its own country code policies in the domain space, and similarly, the RIRs do numbering. Now, there is... there can be global coordination of policies, but it's a very difficult process because what it really requires is five RIRs to agree on identical policy language and then ask for that to become a coordinated global policy. So as you can imagine, there are very few global policies. There are, though, more globally coordinated policies. And, for example, in the transport space, one example of that is, and maybe not necessarily globally, but as among different regions, sometimes it's all five, sometimes it's two or three. But, for example, some regions allow out-of-region transfers of addressing space, but they will only allow it if the other region also allows out of region transfers and so on. So there can be sort of indirect coordination by virtue of the fact that different RIRs adopt similar rules, and so when they have to interact with each other, the rules become somewhat similar. But I've attended a few APNIC meetings now, and I'm going to another one in late February, and you know, it is interesting. You know, it's different, and part of it is just the cultures. Part of it is that they're in a different state than the Aran region, and so those sensitivities are addressed by having the different RIRs develop their policies in their own backyards.
Thanks so much. That was very helpful. So you mentioned about transfers, and that brings up another question that we had, but we didn't have as much information. Eduardo had a question on transfers, but I don't know whether you answered it already or whether, Eduardo, you want to mention it.
When he was mentioning transfers in the presentation, I'm not sure what you were talking about, because I have another question about autonomous system numbers, and which I'm not sure what it is. So when you transfer what, numbers?
Answer the second question first. Autonomous system numbers are numbers that basically are used by organizations to delineate the boundaries of their networks, and it assists networks as opposed to devices to route traffic among them. So an IP address is usually at the device level. An autonomous system number delineates an entire network as defined by the network operator. So that's the sort of high level answer. When you talk about transfers, that relates to IP addresses, and there are kind of three circumstances under which transfers take place. One is if you have something like a corporate merger or a reorganization, where it's basically in order to maintain the accuracy of the registry as a result of that corporate transaction, you want to have the numbering resource is properly identified in terms of who they're allocated or assigned to. Another is the transfer market itself. Entities are allowed to transfer resources to each other, and that there's a very active market in North America, for example, in the IPv4 transfer market, because IPv4 resources are not available from Aaron, generally speaking, anymore, with some very minor exceptions. So what people do is they basically enter into commercial transactions to transfer resources to each other. But as the stewards of numbering resources, those transfers, although Aaron does not get involved in the economic aspect of any such transfer, that's strictly between the purchaser and the seller. There are some criteria relating to whether the recipient validly needs the resources, because again, one of Aaron's roles is resource conservation. So in order to approve the transfer and record the change in the registry, the transfer has to meet policy requirements. And the other way transfers occur is between regions. And the primary reason for that is operators of global networks who need to move their resources around in the world in order to improve the efficiency of routing of their global network. So they may want to deploy some of their numbering resources instead of in the Aaron region in one of the other regions. So there has to be a mechanism for them to be able to export those and for the other region to accept them and vice versa. So those are kind of the three broad categories under which transfers take place. I hope that answers the question.
Okay, thanks so much. We have another question as we go from John Laprise, wanting to know about audits and whether they're conducted internally or by third parties.
So I can only give you a partial answer. As an AC member, I don't get involved in that side of things. That's really a board of trustee and a staff function. I am pretty sure there's an annual sort of financial audit that is done externally, as most organizations, you know, of a significant size would have. As to the details of audits, I know Aaron is a pretty well-run organization, so I'd be very surprised if it doesn't, do some of its own internal auditing. Now, if you're talking about auditing of the accuracy of the database, that's a different issue, and Aaron does have a validation program where it reaches out at least once a year to the point of contact, also called the POC, for resources to try and validate the information in the database relating to the resources held by the POC, and that POC is still the POC, in fact. So I don't know if that really can be considered an auditing function so much as a validation function, but that's kind of tested the limits of my knowledge on auditing.
Thanks so much. Alfredo wanted to know about whether the materials for Aaron on the Road are in any other languages besides English.
Well, I think the ones that happen in the English-speaking part of Aaron are in English. I honestly don't know if anything is translated into other languages. That's a good question. I haven't personally seen them. From a Canadian perspective, I haven't seen them translated into French, for example, and I don't know whether they're translated into Spanish or not. But is there a suggestion there or a request that we should consider doing that? Or
yes, there is.
Okay, well, that's
especially,
something I can...
And especially as apparently there's going to be Aaron on the Road in Puerto Rico, and we would expect them to be in Spanish, but that would be a great idea beforehand to find out so they don't come down and only give it them in English.
So that's an interesting point. I think to do that may require simultaneous translation, because I don't think every single Aaron staff board or AC member that participates in the Aaron on the Road is fluent in Spanish or French. So to arrange that, that's an interesting point. So I will get back to staff with that concern. Thank you.
Okay, great. Okay. Again, it's Judith again. Eduardo has another question about whether NRO board members in ICANN who are also in the NRO constituency in ICANN, do they have voting rights?
Have voting rights where? In ICANN?
In ICANN.
So the NRONC, which is comprised of NRONC members from all five RIRs, elect the board seats 9 and 10, and those board seats 9 and 10 certainly have votes on the ICANN board like any other ICANN board member would.
Thanks, this is Judith again. Thanks so much. Does anyone have any additional questions? Because we've gone through all the list of questions that people had. Oh, Eduardo, you have another question. Okay. So, Eduardo, go ahead.
Thank you. Chris, when you mentioned that you have 20,000 customers and 5,000 members, what's the difference between customers and members? You know, I couldn't get that.
Yeah, so remember at the beginning I said that there are two ways resources are doled out. One is through allocations, and allocations are to organizations like ISPs and network operators, and assignments, which is directly to end users. End users cannot be members typically, but ISPs and organizations that then get allocations from Aaron and then have to manage those resources themselves, either through sub-allocations or assignments, are the members. So typically, that's why you see a big difference, because as an individual, assuming you qualify under Aaron policy, you can get a direct assignment, but you won't necessarily be a member if that happens.
This is Judith again. Eduardo, are you fine with that? Okay, good. And Glenn asked, is seats 9 and 10, is that the NRO Council? Maybe you could give a little bit more information about that.
So seats 9 and 10 are just two of the seats on the ICANN board. They're numbered 9 and 10. So, and they are voted by the NRONC as a whole. I don't know what more I can say about that.
The question was...
This is said what?
I guess the question was that it's in the NRO, so the whole NRO council appoints those two seats. So it could be that an Aaron member would be a board member, too.
They might come from the Aaron region. They might come from one of the other regions. Like, since there are only two seats and five RIRs at any one time, two are in and three are out. So, you know, typically. But that's, you know, it cycles through, so that's kind of the way it works. But the NRONC among itself decides which are the two people from the NRONC that will serve on the ICANN board. But it's only two out of the five RIR regions, and it's two out of the 15 NRONC members.
Thanks so much. Eduardo, you had another question.
It's about the same thing. The reason I'm asking if these two candidates have voting right in the board, and you just answered that, is because in your presentation, they provide advice to the board. And really, they're not providing advice to the board. They're just a board member, just like the rest of the other ones. I mean, they have been appointed by that organization.
Okay,
but
so the NRONC provides advice to the board because it's still a separate entity. But the two people who sit on the board are board members. There's a difference between the two who happen to be board members and the NRONC as a separate entity of 15 people from five RIRs who can at any time, as a group, give advice to the ICANN board as a whole. So there's a distinction there.
Thanks so much, Chris. It's Judith again. Do we have any other questions that we have from other people? Because I think we ran out of the questions that were posted originally. So if anyone has any other questions, now's a good time.
Judith, it's Glenn. If I can just intercede for a second, I'd like to welcome Alan Greenberg, the chair of at large, and if he'd like to just introduce himself or make any comments. I'm sorry that you were tied up on the evolution call, Alan, but we've been getting a great presentation and fantastic questions from the community of our participants today. So I'd like to give Alan an opportunity to say a few words.
Glenn is Judith. I don't think he's on the bridge yet.
Okay. Sorry about that. Okay. So as Judith has said, these are great questions. I've been listing them. The recording will be available. Sorry, Avery. I apologize. I didn't notice you in the list. Avery, did you have any questions as well? I think that's it. So, okay, I think, Judith, I think that's basically it, and I just want to turn back to Chris. Is there any final comments, Chris, that you would like to say to the group?
I just want to thank you all for the opportunity to give this presentation. I am a big believer in Aaron's mandate and how Aaron goes about fulfilling that mandate, and I always love to share that with the broader Internet community. So I'm grateful for the opportunity to make this presentation, and thank you for your engagement.
Great.
Chris,
again,
thanks so much. It's Judith again. I guess the question also is, I know we're going to be asked, can we post the PDF copy to our site, or...
I believe so, but just hold off until I get clearance from staff. They really control that. I can't imagine it's going to be a problem because they post all the materials on Aaron on the Road on their website. But I will get back to you more formally once I get an answer from staff.
Great. And I see Alan Greenberg has now joined our bridge, and I wanted to introduce him. Alan?
Thank you very much. I want to apologize for not making this meeting. Unfortunately, there were overlapping meetings scheduled, one of them to do with the ICANN accountability stream and keeping at large up to date. And unfortunately, that meeting ran over significantly, so I've missed most of this. I will be on the call later in March to be there for the whole thing, but I did want to try to make this one as well. All I can say is I'm just delighted that we're holding the GA at the Aaron meeting. As most people know, the second N in ICANN stands for numbers, but we spend a tremendous amount of our time on the names aspect, and particularly the GNSO. So I think it's marvelous that we're having this opportunity to get acquainted with the whole concept of Internet numbers and how Aaron works and the involvement with ICANN. And I look forward to the meeting in New Orleans.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Alan. And Alan has been a big supporter of us having this type of call. He feels that this is a great way for us to get to know each other, A, and B, there are our co-hosts that we're doing this. And going back, when Evan proposed this idea, which was supposed to be Montreal, we saw really great value in the synergy, and we have an MOU signed with Aaron, and what better way to get to know each other is to have this kind of pre-call in advance. So I see Leah's put her hand up. Leah, go ahead. Leah? Just waiting for
you. Might be on mute.
Okay, Leah, you're on mute. Leah was one of the attendees. She was a fellow in Montreal. Leah's with the San Francisco Bay ISOC chapter. And we still don't hear you, Leah.
Leah, are you on yet? Can we hear you?
No, she says sorry, Judith. Folks, at the beginning of this call, we were making sure everything was going well. And what Chris said, he had two presentations in mind today. One, the basics on Aaron, and then another one on the policy process. We've had such a great turnout today. Unfortunately, the second one that we have is for those that couldn't make it today. But if the community is really interested in a possibly I can twist Chris's arm to possibly arrange another time to do a policy purpose call. Is that a possible idea, Chris, to you, to do an additional call just on policy?
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that session as well at some point. Sure, absolutely. Just as long as we can work out the schedule well in advance, I don't see a problem.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thanks much, Glenn. And Leah asked me to read out her question.
Okay,
so her thing was that her chapter, that San Francisco Bay ISOC chapter, it was in ALS with us, is planning a collaborative meeting with Aaron in California this October, and they're working with Susan Hamlin, and I guess her thought was maybe they could have some more insight or thoughts of how this should happen or what they should be doing, and maybe you guys can talk together about that. I'm guessing that was her question. Is that her statement?
Yes. Anything that we can do to help, I think the Aaron on the Road is very much staff-driven, so Susan Hamlin is a great resource for that. But if you have any specific questions on AC matters or the PDP, policy development process, or anything else, I'm always available to take questions and interact. And if I can't answer your question or if I'm not the right person, I'll refer you to the people who are the correct people. So I'm happy to interact and help in whatever way I can.
Great. Thanks again, Chris. Okay, I think that's it for today. This is a great kickoff of the call. And if you missed some of the links, we're trying to capture all the links. And thank you, Alfredo, for doing that. Chris, you'll get back to us on distribution of the PPT or the...
I will do that.
Great. Okay, folks, thanks again. And don't forget, we have our Norello call coming up next Monday. And it's going to have a special 30 minutes with the two candidates. So we look forward to hearing you and talking to you next week. Thanks again. Bye, everybody.
Okay, thanks. Goodbye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye. Gracias.
Bye.
Thank you all. This meeting is now adjourned. Have a lovely rest of the day. Bye-bye.